I am pleased to present an audio recording of the workshop on the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali that I presented on May 20th, 2017. In this discussion, we discussed the concepts of Purusha and Prakriti as presented in Sutra numbers 18 through 22 of Chapter 2 of the Yoga Sutras. This chapter is titled Sadhana Pada. I hope you will enjoy the discussion, and as always, I look forward to hearing back from you. Let's recite Om three times. Inhale. We'll do the invocation now. So you can either read the screen or just sing along with me if you're familiar with it. Close the eyes at that case. Inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena Yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Okay. Maybe you can read the meaning in English loud.
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutation to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the munis, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise on Ayurveda, of language through his treatise on grammar, Patanjali Mahabhashya, and the impurities of the chitta, mind field, through his treatise on yoga, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, those who are joining for the first time, you're actually joining at the very thick part of the yoga philosophy, which is the guts of the yoga philosophy. It's all based on what's called the Sankhya philosophy. So if it seems a little heavy, please bear with me. Just stay with it.
Do you mind if I record?
It's getting recorded, but you're welcome to record it. I always share this with everyone.
Okay, then that's fine.
Yeah.
I'll wait for your email.
No, he said he'll wait for your email.
So. You'll get it. Okay. So again, to bring you kind of up to speed, those who are joining for the first time, the Yoga Sutra is basically a text which talks about the concepts or the underlying concepts of yoga, what yoga is, and what are the different techniques or practices, what the objectives of yoga are and how to achieve those objectives, and all that is mentioned there. Okay? There are four chapters in the text. Chapter 1 is where it defines the concept of yoga, and it also talks in great length about the concept of samadhi. Samadhi is one of the final stages of the practice of yoga. Okay? So there's a lot of discussion on the concept of samadhi in chapter 1. It also talks about the concept of abhyasa and vairagya, which is the two things that you need to practice to calm the mind eventually. Abhyasa is practice and vairagya is?
Dispassion,
detachment, non-attachment, combination of all these. Okay. So that's chapter 1. Then chapter 2 has two main topics. One is to introduce the concept of suffering. The term used by Patanjali is klesha. What is klesha? What is suffering? What causes suffering? What different types of sufferings are there? And then how it is connected with all our karma theory, you know, what is karma, what is reincarnation and all that good stuff. What causes suffering, what is the main source of suffering, that's what we're going to talk about today. That's a part of the discussion that we started two sessions ago. So we've done roughly two sessions on that concept of three sessions now. Klesha, suffering, what causes suffering and all that. So that'll be the part of the discussion today. But then it continues to go on and introduces this concept of eight limbs of yoga. So Patanjali says, if you want to finally eliminate suffering from your mind and then bring the mind to a state where it can become very calm, then you have to practice these eight limbs of yoga. Okay? And we spent almost like 8 or 9 months going through these eight limbs of yoga earlier as a part of this discussion. So kind of we are done with that part now. We go back and forth. I do this in a sequence that I find more logical. Okay, Patanjali has his own sequence, but I do it in a sequence that to me makes more sense. If I were to do it that way, you know, I would understand it better. So that's how I present it also. Okay, so I went through chapters, end of chapter 2 and then chapter 3 first, and then we're going back to the beginning part of chapter 2. Then in chapter 3, it talks about a little more about the meditation. And finally, it goes into a detailed description of what's called vibhutis in yoga. Vibhutis are all the super normal powers that the practice of yoga can give you. Okay? So that's called vibhuti, super normal powers. And that's all chapter 3. Chapter 4 goes into more deeper understanding of what the final state of this whole all these practices is. So the title of that chapter is called Kaivalya Pada. Kaivalya means the final state of yoga, final state of freedom, you can say, or being totally aware of your true identity, okay, of your true nature. That's the final chapter. So the first chapter is called Samadhi Pada. Like I said, it's talking more about Samadhi. Second chapter is called Sadhana Pada. Sadhana is the technique or the methodology to achieve your goals. Sadhana Pada. Third chapter is called Vibhuti Pada. Vibhuti means supernormal powers that you can attain. And the fourth chapter is called the Kaivalya Pada. Kaivalya is the state of total freedom. Okay? So those are the four different chapters. And we went through pretty much the entire chapter 1 and about the first 15 sutras from chapter 3. The rest of it is all vibhuti. We're not getting into that stuff. All the supernormal powers. And then we started with chapter 2. Okay, so now we are in chapter 2. So that's what we'll be dealing with now. Okay, so it starts actually with, you know, this concept of Kriya Yoga and all that in chapter 2. Kriya Yoga is the practice of, anybody remember the definition of Kriya Yoga? The three parts of Kriya Yoga? No? Yes, that's one of them. Tapaswadhyaya Ishwara Pranidhana. Okay. And these are the five, you know, three of the five niyamas. So there are eight limbs of yoga. Like I said, pardon me because, you know, there's some of these things we have talked about, but don't worry about it. If it doesn't get in, that's okay. You'll get some of it, so you get some ideas, okay? So of the eight limbs of yoga, the niyamas contain these three practices. Tapas is to take your body and mind through some tough, sort of measured tough times, basically. Tapasya, in Sanskrit we call tapasya. Do that at the physical as well as the mental level. Swadhyaya is to study yourself through an understanding of the concepts that are presented in the texts, like Yoga Sutras or Bhagavad Gita or some of the other ancient texts. That's Swadhyaya. And Ishvara Pranidhana is the ability to let go and surrender yourself to Ishvara. Ishvara is the concept presented by Patanjali as something that is totally pure, non-changeable, totally unafflicted by anything, and always pure. All right, that's Ishvara. And through that, he says, once you do that, establish that practice of Kriya Yoga, Tapas, Swadhyaya, and Pranayama, he says, you can diminish immeasurably all the sufferings, kleshas of the mind. Okay, and then we went into the discussion of the five kleshas. Okay, what are the five kleshas? Anybody? Remember? Five kleshas, five causes of suffering. Avidya, asmita, raga, dvesha, abhinivesha. Wonderful. So they are called avidya, which is ignorance. Avidya is ignorance. Asmita is ego. So ignorance, ego, raga is?
Anger.
No, raga, not anger. That may be a Marathi meaning.
Fond of something.
To be attached to something. Attachments. Raga is attachments. See, what happens is in our regional languages, many Sanskrit words have taken on a meaning which is different from what it was originally intended to be in Sanskrit. And that happens in every language. You know, we come up with words in Sanskrit, which in my language means something different than what it is originally intended to do. Okay, so I'm assuming it's a Marathi interpretation of that word. Okay. Krodha is actually one of the results of that raga. Because if you're attached to something and if you don't get it, you get angry. That's the result. It's the outcome of raga is krodha. Okay. So raga is attachment and dvesha is?
Jealousy. Dvesha is hatred, yes.
Dislike, hatred. That's dvesha. And abhinivesha is
clinging to life,
desire to maintain status quo. I'm very happy here. I don't want any change. And that causes suffering eventually because change is inevitable. But you are so used to certain aspect of something and you don't like change, but then when change happens, you suffer. So that abhinivesha is the cause of suffering. And abhinivesha is caused by raga and dvesha. So when you have attachment to something, you are fearful of losing it, but you are very comfortable in one situation, and then you suffer. Raga and dvesha are caused by the ego, asmita. Because ego says, I like it, I want it. Then you don't get it. Then you get attached to it. Then you want it more. Then you experiment it. Maybe you get it, maybe you like it, maybe you like it one more time, second time, fifth time, 100th time, and it becomes a habit. Good or bad, it doesn't matter. Same thing happens to dvesha. You dislike something, that's it, you stay with that. Right? Like kids, you know, you tell the kids, Try this food. No, Mom, I don't like it. You haven't tried it. But I'm telling you, I don't like the looks of it. That's dvesha. And it's not just kids. We all do that. It's just that I'm giving that example, but most of us are familiar with that. But we all do that at every level. Caused by ego. Ego is the main culprit for all the problems in life. And what causes ego?
Avidya,
ignorance. Because I don't know who I am, therefore my ego can raise its head now. If I knew who I am, then the ego has no role to play. But because I'm ignorant, because I don't know who I am, ego says, if you don't know who you are, I know who I am. I'm going to take over now. You know, it's whoever is more powerful. Right? If I'm weak, I don't know what my true identity is. Ego says, I know who I am. I love doing things the way I do, and that's it. I'm going to create all these passions, all these likes, dislikes, hatreds, everything, because that's how I live, and that's how I want to live. And then, ego is happy, but we suffer. Everyone get that idea? Okay. So, that's the whole point of this practice of yoga, is to eventually eliminate that avidya, that ignorance. So the whole purpose of the practice of yoga is to eliminate avidya. That's it. When that happens, the ego doesn't know what to do, and it kind of lies very low then. Okay, that's the part that we started talking about in the last few sessions, okay? And then we got into this whole concept of the philosophy called the Sankhya philosophy, Sankhya. Because yoga is based very largely on the concepts taken from the Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya is a much older philosophy. In fact, it's considered to be the oldest among the Indian philosophies. There are two types of philosophies in India. One is called Astika, the other is called Nastik. Anybody heard these terms?
Yeah,
Nastik. Anybody? Astika philosophies and Nastik philosophies. What are the Astika philosophies?
Faith in the God.
No, what are they? There are six of them. They're called Astika philosophies. Say that again.
Vedanta
is one of them.
Mimamsa.
Uttar Mimamsa. That's Mimamsa. Now it's called Mimamsa. Purva Mimamsa is called Mimamsa. Uttar Mimamsa is called Vedanta now. And what are the other four? Anybody heard the term yoga? No? That's one of them. You can't forget that. Yoga is one of those six. And what I've been mentioning the word Sankhya. So it has got to be one of those six. Got it? Sankhya philosophy, yoga philosophy, Mimamsa, Vedanta. There are two more. Those are Nyaya and Vaisheshika. Nyaya and Vaisheshika. So those are the six philosophy or philosophical systems which are under the category called Astika. Astika means that they acknowledge the superiority of the Vedic knowledge as the source of all knowledge. So those philosophies which recognize the Vedas or the knowledge that is derived from the Vedas as the authentic source of all knowledge. They are called Astik.
How do you spell Astik?
A-S-T-I-K.
Is that it?
A with the bar on top.
But Astik is always referred to in terms of believers in God. Versus
right. That's the common person meaning. That's also the same, that also has a meaning, but in the context of when you discuss philosophy, then Aastik philosophy is the one which recognizes the value of Vedas in terms of the truth or the source of all knowledge. Okay? But in common parlance, Aastik means, you know, I believe in God. That's not the meaning when you apply it to philosophy. Okay? Vedas, that's the main thing. Then the other I said was Gnostic. And there are commonly mentioned two or three philosophies which are considered to be Gnostic philosophies. They are Buddhism is one, Buddha. Jainism is another one. So Buddhism, Jainism, and there was another ancient philosophy called Charvaka philosophy. I don't know if you've heard that term, Charvaka philosophy. Anyway, let's not get into all that discussion. I don't know why it's kind of dragged it into here. But yoga is one of these six philosophical systems which are based on the concept that Vedas contain the ultimate truth of knowledge. Okay? Now, Sankhya is a very, very ancient philosophical system. And the main concept in Sankhya is that there are two entities. Both are eternal, so to say. They have no beginning, no end. Okay, and these two entities are called Purusha and Prakriti. Anybody remember those terms? Purusha and Prakriti? So maybe, because I'm doing a little discussion here. So if I were to start writing some of these terms, okay, so Purusha, can everyone read it? Prakriti. These are the two entities which are eternal. Purusha is the Atma or the soul. Purusha is the consciousness, is the pure consciousness which brings us awareness. Consciousness gives us awareness. Okay? Pure consciousness. That's what makes us aware. That's the, in loose language, it's called Atma, soul. Okay. Technical term is Purusha. All right. And then Prakriti is everything else that we believe to be the real stuff. That's Prakriti. The reality is Purusha. Everything is based on that. But Prakriti is everything else. That means this whole body, physical body, the five senses, the mind, intellect, everything is the Prakriti part. Okay, now the reality of the situation is that Purusha is the pure consciousness. The Prakriti, including the intellect, is non-conscious. That means there is no innate consciousness. For Buddhi, for intellect to function, it actually, they say, gets a reflection of the consciousness from Purusha. So it's the reflected consciousness that it is using for its function. Otherwise, it is purely innate. It's not innate. It's unconscious. No consciousness. All right. So they have to work together. The Prakriti and Purusha have to work together for this whole experience to happen. This experience of this life to happen. Okay, so that's where we roughly are, and let's see where we were last time. This is not what I want. I want full view, full screen mode. Yes. Okay. So anybody remember the sutra we did last time? Last one?
2.18.
Hmm?
2.18,
we went through 2.18. 18 or 15?
18.
Oh, we did 18. Oh. Yes. Yep. So, let's kind of review this, because this is an important sutra just for the purpose of review. So let's repeat the Sanskrit. Okay. Prakash. Kriya,
Kriya,
Sthiti,
Sthiti,
Shilam,
Shilam,
Bhutendriya,
Bhutendriya,
Atmakam,
Atmakam,
Bhog,
Bhoga,
Apavartha,
Apavartha,
Apavarga,
Apavarga,
Artham, that's the Drishyam. Now, this is the definition of Drishyam. Drishyam is Prakriti. There's another word for Prakriti. Drishyam is something that is seen. Drishya in Hindi or Sanskrit or maybe Marathi probably means this something that is seen, right? And drashta is the one who sees. So in the context of yoga philosophy, Purusha is the drashta or the one that observes, and Prakriti is the drishyam or the stuff that is seen. Okay? So he is defining what this drishyam is, all right? And this is what we went over last time in fair depth. So prakash, kriya, and sthiti, these are the sort of the more yogic terms for the three gunas. Now the three gunas are sattva, rajas, and tamas. Have you heard these terms at all? Are you familiar with them somewhat? So prakash is sattva. Kriya is rajas and sthiti is tamas. So prakash, kriya, sthiti. Prakash means light. Light means wisdom or something which is positive, something which doesn't have any kind of negative tendencies. That's prakash. Kriya means action. Kriya means activity. Which is rajas. Rajas means activity. Okay? Ambition, desires, that raga and dvesha, they are all a form of, they are all the part of the rajas part, or the kriya. Sthiti means, sthiti, stability. Staying in one place. I don't want to move. I'm happy where I am. I just want to sit and eat this bag of potato chips and have my beer and I'm watching football. I'm doing nothing else. Right? It's coming, right? Soon. Football season is coming. So, that's called
tamas
or sthiti in this case. It's the same thing. Okay? So, prakash, kriya, and sthiti, shilam. Okay? Shilam is just accompanied by all this. Okay? So, that's one part of it. This prakriti is a composite of these three, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Then bhutendriya. Bhuta are the? What are the bhutas?
Earth.
Hmm?
Earth, the fire.
Yes, the five elements. Earth, fire, water, air, and ether. Those are called the they are called the mahabhutas. Pancha, five mahabhutas. So, bhutas and indriyas. Indriyas. What are the indriyas?
Senses.
Senses. How many indriyas they normally represent?
Five.
In this case, 11. What are the 11 senses? The five senses, sense of smell, sense of taste, touch, etc. Five senses. Then associated with each sense, there is a sense organ. Sense of smell with the nose, sense of touch with the skin, sense of sight with the eyes, etc. So they are called the organs of
action.
No, they are called jnanendriyas, organs of knowledge, organs of perception. Okay? Action are different. So, for all these 10 senses to work, you need something. The mind.
Just checking.
Right? Now you heard me, that was the sense of hearing. For it to function, you have to think. The mind is absolutely essential. That's one of the senses then. One of the indriyas. Alright? So 11 indriyas and 5 mahabhutas. So these are the 16 basic elements of this prakriti. Okay? 16 basic elements. But then we've also talked about these 7 other elements, right? Making it a composite of 23 basically. Okay? What are the other 7 that we left? 5 organs of action. What are these?
Touch.
Organs of action. Action. Now, not senses. 5 organs of action.
Kama.
No, action. Action. How do you create action? Action is done through hands, feet. You know, you kick.
Procreation.
So that's the action, right? Hands are one. Hands and arms, that's one. Legs and feet, that's number 2. Number 3 is procreation. All the indriyas of procreation, organs of procreation. Number 4 is
excretion.
Elimination, excretion, elimination, elements or the organs of excretion, elimination. And 5th is the most dangerous one. You haven't talked
speech.
It's tongue, basically. Tongue is the organ of action which is the most dangerous. Okay.
Is digestion a part of the excretion? Is digestion part of...
Digestion is a process which is... Then the elimination is the action. Those organs, they use that to eliminate.
Okay.
All these physiological functions are all internal. They are going on. Okay, so that makes it 21. There are 2 more.
Mind, intellect, and ego.
Mind, we just talked about it.
Intellect and ego.
Intellect and the ego. Okay, so that makes it 23 basic constituents of prakriti. Okay. So, but there he is just talking about bhuta and indriya. And then what is the purpose of all this now? What's the purpose of prakash, kriya, sthiti, everything that we talked about? The purpose is twofold. The twofold purpose is bhoga and apavarga. Bhoga and apavarga. Those are the 2 main functions of this entire prakriti that we are. So what does bhoga mean?
Experience.
Experiencing everything in life. Experiencing life. Bhoga means having an experience. At every state, every stage, we have experience in our waking stage, dream state, dreamless, deep state, etc., etc. All those are a part of this word called bhoga. Right? And what's apavarga?
Liberation.
Apavarga means is to eventually liberate us from this bondage which keeps us tied to our ego. So that's the liberation part. So bhoga and apavarga. So this whole purpose of prakriti is to provide this twofold, has a twofold objective. Bhoga is to provide life's experiences, good, bad, indifferent, every kind. And eventually guide the intellect to become fully aware of what its true identity is and not be so influenced by the ego. Intellect is always influenced by the ego. Okay, the common example I've been giving in most classes is, you know, that the intellect, which is the pure thinking machine, pure discriminatory machine, intellect, at night it comes with a flash that tomorrow morning I'm going to start my yoga practice 6 o'clock. Psh, set the alarm. So we set the alarm, and we're happy to go to sleep. Come 6 o'clock, the alarm goes off, but the ego wakes up first. It says, you think you're going to do yoga? This is such a stupid idea. I mean, this is such a beautiful morning. I'm so comfortably warm in my covers and everything. Let's hit the snooze button. Snooze button. Okay? So all the intellect's plans are smashed. Right there. Right?
So experiences, I mean, I understand the liberation. Isn't that like what Yoga Sutras are preaching? But
experience, you have to experience life.
Experience is natural, but liberation
is a part of the practice of yoga.
Okay.
Part of the purpose of life.
Right. But this is, I mean, this is a statement about the purpose of yoga. Is that right?
This is a statement which is just describing what Prakriti is. Okay. What is Prakriti? What is this whole concept of Prakriti? This is to describe Drishyam.
So, what I'm getting at is, without the knowledge of yoga, let's say, I think I would not think of liberation.
Well, it's coming to all that. It's getting there, slowly. But this is just to understand the concepts.
I understand what you're saying, that we wouldn't even think about it, that there's a way to liberate ourselves from.
Or even that is an object.
Yeah, that there's even an option.
But
like
this
that.
Is just one sutra.
No. The point is this. Let's say you have no knowledge of yoga. You have never heard the term yoga. You're going through suffering. Okay? Oh my God, you know, this is happening, and my grandmother is doing this, my son-in-law is doing this, my mother-in-law is doing this, you know, I'm in pain and suffering and all that. We're going through all that, right? There will be a moment when there's some thought in mind, how do I get out of all this suffering? There must be a way out. You're not thinking of yoga. You're thinking of eliminating suffering in some way. You may go to a baba or get some kind of call this guy in New York who, what is his name? His ads come on the TV all the time.
Oh yeah, psychic leaders.
What's that?
Psychic.
No, not psychics. Well, they have the astrology and all that stuff. I see that name sometimes on TV. So you call that guy and spend $1,000, please give me some mala or something so that I can do this. That's what happens then. But the point is, you are looking for some means of eliminating suffering. That's apavarga. Means is not what we're talking about. It's understanding the concept. That we have experiences in life, but we are seeking liberation from the suffering that we are constantly going through. Right? Well, you see that ad on the TV channel. Oh, my son was failing in exams, and I got to this Baba, and he gave me this mantra, and now he's doing very well, and all that, you know.
So this kind of ties back into the concept of reincarnation.
We already talked about that.
Because Purusha depends on these things to liberate itself, and until it achieves liberation, it has to come back again.
Absolutely, you're 100% right. That's what we talked about in the last few sessions. Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
And what part of the Prakriti follows you from life to life? Because
not everything. No. It's the what's called the. There are three kinds of bodies. They call them. One is called the sthula sharira, which is the gross body, physical body, 5 bhutas. Then the other is called the sthula sharira, which is sthula is the sukshma or the subtle body, which are these 11, and you know, then the mind and ego and all that, okay? So all those are constituents of the sukshma sharira, which is the subtle body. And then, of course, there's the causal body, which is the pure prakriti and all that. But the sukshma body or the subtle body and this purusha and the atma, which is tied together with this subtle body, okay, that whole thing goes into a new body when the rebirth happens. Reincarnation happens with that whole bag going with it. It's called karmashaya. And the term that Patanjali uses is karmashaya. Karma, ashaya. Ashaya is a bag, a container. Karma is all this stuff that we carry.
Is memory
from.
Part of it?
Hmm?
Is memory also part of
That's
it?
That's it. Memory, samskaras, vasanas, all those things are a part of this bag. We call it the samskara bag, memories and everything. We carry all that with us.
So you carry essentially part of Prakruti with you?
Yes, absolutely. Because we are not liberated, because we don't know who we are, so we are tied to this. We bonded to it. Our Atma, so to say, or the pure consciousness is bonded to this because we doesn't know any better. And because of this bondage, there's no liberation. Because there's no liberation, there is rebirth. And when the rebirth happens, you come back with the same baggage. Or part of this baggage, not the same baggage. But there are different ways to understand that. Alright? So the purpose of understanding all this is to, what happened? Sleep. So to explain, this is all we covered last time actually. The concept of drishyam. Drishyam is the prakriti, or the seen part. Somewhat okay?
Yep.
Alright. So now we start with the next slide. So let's read the Sanskrit first, all right? So this is number 19. Vishesha, avishesha, linga matra, alingani, guna parvani. Get it? Vishesha, avishesha, linga matra, alingani, guna parvani. Okay. Those of you know the Devanagari, it's much easier to read. Anybody reads Devanagari? You all read, okay. Wonderful. Okay. Sanskrit is much easier read in Devanagari than in English. Okay. Now, read the translation, Sandesh.
The stages of the gunas are specific, non-specific, defined and undefinable.
How easy is it to understand the sutra? From the word.
It is specific and non-specific. It is definable and non-definable.
No, that's why, you know, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras are extremely cryptic, and by themselves, they are not easy to. They are not understandable at all. You have to read commentaries. I mean, the whole purpose of Patanjali, you know, in those days, was to present these things so that people could memorize. There was nothing, no written instrument was there, right? In those days, it had to be memorized. So it had to be very, very brisk, crisp, concise. And cryptic.
Yeah, concise.
Concise, so that you could memorize it. But then, the expectation was that the teacher who is explaining all that will have enough knowledge so that they can explain it, right? So now, you know, who do we look to? We look to all these different commentaries, you know, that have been written by various authors, right? So those are our guides to try and make sense of what Patanjali might have meant. Okay. So now, these terms here again represent the drishya or the prakriti, right? And we said there are 23 elements, right? Now they go from gross to subtler to subtler to the subtlest elements. At the very gross level, we have these five bhutas: earth, water, air, fire, and ether. Right? They are the gross elements. Then you go a little bit subtler, then you have the senses, five sense organs, etc. Five sense organs, organs of action. Then you go subtler, ego is very subtle. Even subtler is buddhi. So buddhi is the subtlest. Okay, that's the buddhi is the intellect. Intellect is at the very subtlest level. And then it goes slowly into the less and less subtler, eventually into the most sthula part, gross part. Right? So, subtle to gross. The very gross part is called Vishesha. Okay. Now again, these are commentaries written by these various authors. They have to interpret all these things, so that's how they go about explaining this. That these five bhutas are the Visheshas. The characteristic of these is that they cannot cause any further effect. It's all based on cause and effect. There is some cause and there's an effect. At the very subtlest level, the cause of all this creation itself is the, what's called the, I remember we talked about it a long time ago, it's called the Mula Prakriti. Mula is the very root or the very
original
Prakriti, Mula Prakriti, which is the Prakriti which is a balance of the three gunas, Sattva, Rajas and Gunas, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. When these three gunas, they were in perfect balance at some point in time, then there was no creation at that time. None of these elements existed, none of the creation as we know today existed, in a sense. Okay? Because these three gunas were in perfect balance. That is called the Mula Prakriti. Mula Prakriti, which is the original source of everything. So that's at the highest level of the subtlest being. Okay, we'll come to that, okay? So, that's the subtlest level of the Prakriti. Then the creation happens when there is a imbalance of the three gunas. Rajas takes over. Rajas means action. Somehow it takes over. How? Nobody knows. The Sankhya philosophy doesn't tell you how Rajas takes over. It does. Right? Somehow it happens. When Rajas takes over, things happen. Creation happens. The first thing that is created is buddhi. Intellect is the first element. Now, buddhi happens to be the cause and the effect is the ego. So, first the main Mula Prakriti was the cause, the effect was the buddhi. Then buddhi becomes the cause, the effect is the ego. Then ego becomes the cause, and the effect is the five senses, sense organs and all that. And it also gives rise to the five bhutas eventually, because they want to connect with the five senses. So something has to be connected with the five senses, so five bhutas. This is a very dry topic in some ways, okay, but I hope it makes some sense. You know, it's hard for me to make it interesting.
I think it's a matter of perspective. Once you have some basic background and the perspective, then this makes sense. Otherwise, this is gibberish.
Right. You're absolutely right. This is gibberish because it takes some background in understanding. And this is what we're building here. That's the whole purpose of these discussions, is to build that basic background, so that, you know, it doesn't sound gibberish at all, then, you know, start making sense. And then once you start getting it, it makes so much sense Then you start thinking, how can I live without it? How could I have lived without it all these years?
And that becomes very thought-provoking.
And then it becomes not just thought-provoking, it begins to lead you into different lifestyle, changes your lifestyle patterns. And obviously then it becomes much more meaningful, the life becomes more meaningful, less suffering and all that. So, you know, it's a chain reaction that happens eventually. So let me just go through this one quickly now. Okay, so the three stages of the gunas are specific, non-specific, defined and undefinable. The undefinable are the alingani. Alingani. Alinga means there is no symbol. There is no symbol. Linga means a symbol or some indication as to what it is. Linga. Okay. Alinga means no. Trying to think of a word that is appropriate. Alinga means
structure.
No indicator. Yeah, no indicator. Not represented, that's a good one. So Mula Prakriti, which we said is the root cause of everything, that's Alinga. Okay? Linga Matra, it has only one connection. It only points to the Mula Prakriti and nothing else. It has only one source, one cause. That is the Buddhi. Okay? Intellect. Then Avishesha. Avishesha means, Vishesha is in this case, Vishesha, which is the last stage, which are the five bhutas. Vishesha, it ends there. They have no more effect possible. They are not the cause of anything. They are the ultimate effect. That's Vishesha. Avishesha is the intermediate state, where they have a cause and they also have an effect. That's the ego. Ego can cause all these senses, but it has a cause, which is the intellect. Intellect is the linga matra. Linga matra means it has only one indicator, linga matra, undi, which is the pure prakriti, mula prakriti. And then alinga, mula prakriti has no indicator, nothing. It's pure, clean. That's this whole concept of prakriti. This is Sankhya philosophy at its deepest point, you know, pure Sankhya philosophy.
So is the idea that everyone starts with their own mula prakriti, or that
yes,
there's one original?
Well, that's
like
a great...
Like a Big Bang thing, or every person?
It's coming to that, but you're right, it's like the Big Bang thing.
Okay.
It's one... You know, and then we get a kind of a trace of that one.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's kind of similar to Vedanta stuff, but with different terms.
Different concept there. Okay. And we'll, since you mentioned Vedanta, we'll talk about the difference.
Okay.
But yeah, that's true. You can think of it as one big thing, prakriti, and then we get an element of it, some subset of it, in a sense. It's coming to that, actually.
Okay.
There's a sutra there. Okay, let's move on. Okay, so that was a sutra which was described, those few sutras were describing the prakriti. And now he's talking about the drashta. Drashta is the seer, the one who sees now, drashta. So let's read this. Drashta. Drishi matraha. Shuddhopi. Pratyaya. Anupashyaha. Okay, so again, drashta. Drishi matraha. Shuddhopi. Pratyaya. Anupashyaha. All right, what does it mean now? Let's read the English translation.
The seer is nothing but the power of seeing which, although pure, appears to see through the mind.
Right.
The seer is
a glass of wine too. During this time.
No, but, you know, this is exactly how I felt when I started reading sutras. So my first reading was, I decided, because I read a few sutras first, and they seemed to make a lot of sense. I'm going back many, many years when I started reading this. It seemed to make a lot of sense, some of the concepts there. So I said, let me read the whole thing once. And I read through the whole thing page to page without understanding anything, zero. I didn't understand anything whatsoever. It made no sense to me. But whatever did make sense, I said, there is something to it that I have to, that made me latch on to it. All right? I said, it seems to make a lot of sense. And then I started reading these commentaries, one after the other. And more you read, more it begins to make sense, and more questions you have to ask, and more doubts come, and then, of course, it's a multiplication thing. And then you start realizing that this can really mold your life in a very different way now. And that's where it begins to really make a lot of sense, because then it becomes it's a guide for your life. It is so beautiful after that. But initially, yes. What the hell is he talking about?
So did Patanjali actually explain all these?
I'm sure he must have had students, who he was teaching. That's the assumption, that he had students. He was a teacher. That's why the very first sutra, that's what gives the people the impression that he was a teacher. Because the very first sutra is Atha Yoga Anushasanam. That's the very first sutra in the first chapter. Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Atha means, that's the clue, they say. That's the word which gives them the clue that he was a teacher and that he had a big following or something, or he had some students. Atha means
now,
at this moment, now, therefore. Now we are ready to understand yoga. And that phrase gives people the clue that when he says now, that means many things. I prepared you guys up until now with other things, and now you have the basic background so that now you are able to understand yoga. Right? You have the background now. That means he has already been teaching other stuff to them. Now I'm going to teach you. Because I know this stuff. I have the authority to teach you. So it also establishes the teacher that, he is qualified to teach. And also sets the responsibility of the students. That, look, you guys are ready, and now it's your responsibility to understand yoga. So that word Atha means a lot. Okay? That's what establishes the authorship, the authority of the teacher and the ability of the students to be ready. So yes, he must have had students and he must have been teaching other stuff to them to prepare them for receiving this knowledge or this wisdom. Okay. And of course, like we said in that original invocation, he was also credited with Ayurveda and grammar. So,
but he didn't write more. We only have this from him, right? Hmm. And then the commentators are the ones
who described. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to, actually.
Yeah. Say that again?
Patanjali did not explain in writing. He only gave us these terse...
These terse statements, but the person who's credited with the most authentic authoritative commentary, his name is Vyasa. Okay, and most people tend to believe that he was a compatriot of Patanjali, and probably he knew him personally or something. And now his commentary is considered almost an extension of Patanjali.
Gold standard.
Absolutely the gold standard. So Vyasa's commentary is the gold standard for his explanation. Sorry, I didn't understand your question.
I was kind of asking that, whether he wrote everything down or he just explained.
Absolutely nothing.
But there was a story, like he wrote everything on some leaves.
And a goat came and ate.
And also Patanjali is a half snake and half...
The stories are there, yes.
He should have had these recordings.
That's what they call Akashic records these days. They're available somewhere in the sky. They're called.
You just need to tune to that frequency.
Tune to that frequency and then you get it all. That's exactly right. Okay, so drashta, drishi matra. Drishi matra simply means observer only. Drishi means the observer, matra is only. Some of you know these terms, I think, you know, from your...
I had Sanskrit in school.
Oh, you had Sanskrit in
school? Some words are familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Most people from India, you know, they have at least some inkling of some of these words, because they trickle down into their own regional languages also. Right. You get something out of it. So, he is the observer only, it says. He is just the observer. Shuddha. Shuddha means he is pure. Now, you can keep on explaining what that word pure means, but you know, at our level, all we want to see is that he is not afflicted by anything. He doesn't go through any of the stuff that we go through. In its true sense, this Purusha is totally pure. It is the apparent bondage with the ego that makes it all impure.
Yeah, and the way I read this was Purusha, when you are pure, I mean Purusha is pure, so you try to see, you should see clear or pure. But the mind is a lens, or the ego is a lens, which modifies the stuff. And
you read it right, perfectly. That's the meaning of the statement.
Okay.
Because it says shuddhopi. That means even though, api means even though it is pure, pratyaya means, what is pratyaya?
What is
going on in the mind. So whatever is the content of the mind, anupashya. It seems to follow. Anupashya means to follow. Anupashya means, pashya means to see, anupashya means to follow. So, even though it is pure by itself, but because of the influence of the ego, it appears as though it is following whatever is in the mind. That's what your point was, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what is happening.
I read the word see through as see through it.
See, no, it is.
That is not affected by the mind, something
like that. No. It's using the mind.
Yeah.
It's using the mind as a lens.
But I read it like it sees through the mind.
Well, again, these commentaries, you know, these commentators, they have their own language. I took this from Swami Satchidananda's book. And not everything is very accurate, but that's okay.
His interpretation is also really good and really helpful.
Say that again?
His Swami Satchidananda's, like, interpretation part is really good. He says, even though the light is pure and never changing, it appears to change because of the medium of nature. So the sun's rays appear to bend when they pass through a section of water, although they don't actually bend. And likewise, we are all the same light, but we do not look alike, act alike, or think alike because of the nature of our bodies and minds. So although the original substance is the same, we appear to be different.
That's very nice. Mm. It's a good explanation.
I didn't. Swami
Satchidananda. That's good. I'm glad you have it handy and read it. Okay, that's very good. Okay. Actually, this is the book that I read first. The very first book I ever read was this book. That's because, you know, I went for my training to Yogaville, and he was alive in those days. Okay, so So he used to give darshan every week and a satsang at the ashram. Okay, so for...
In Yogaville?
He started Yogaville.
Oh, really? Okay.
He's the main person who started Yogaville. So when I went for my training, this was in 96. So every Saturday we used to have a satsang with him. So we would do question answers, give a brief talk. And his personality was very impressive. He was a very big, tall guy. Almost, I would say, more than 6 foot, I think. But, you know, long, flowing beard, and I will tell you, I mean, he looked very magnanimous. I mean, really great personality. And his speech was beautiful, you know. He spoke nice pace and very calm mannerism, you know, just like a Swami is supposed to have, you know, so.
Clarity of thought, I'm sure.
Very clarity, very beautiful clarity of thought. No matter what question you ask, he would have an answer which would satisfy you. Okay, so that's what he did. And so my first exposure, my first introduction to Yoga Sutras was during my teacher's training. Before that, I had no idea about this at all.
But time translation is also good.
Hmm?
Time in
a... Yeah. There are many, many now. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, this is the first translation that I read. Then we got into many, many other different translations, commentaries. Okay. But this is a good one to get started with. Okay, so that's drashta. That's the pure consciousness, pure awareness, which is tainted by the lens called the mind or the ego. Even though it by itself it's very pure, but because of this apparent association, this bonding through the mind, so it appears tainted by that. That's purusha. Purusha or drashta.
What's the purpose of this arrangement, though?
Of this arrangement means?
That the purusha has to depend on prakriti to get liberation, and it has to go through these experiences.
Well,
if purusha is so pure on its own, why does it need to go through a body?
There's not that purusha needs to go through it. It's just that the way we perceive it. It's the ego which makes us perceive that. See, you're asking the question, why is there a vidya, right? There's no answer to that question. Nobody tells us what the answer to that.
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm saying this: the entire structure, the arrangement, that there is something called purusha.
So something like, yeah. Why is there a cat and mouse game? I
mean, yeah.
No? Why? Because of avidya. Avidya. The cause is avidya. That's what I was coming to. Why it's all happening is because of avidya. Avidya is ignorance. What's the cause of avidya? That's the question, right?
No, to certain extent, what are you saying? I mean,
what is the fundamental purpose of even having all this? That you have a conscious mind, a subconscious mind, uh-huh. And purusha.
Right.
And then,
so, essentially, she is asking, I think, why God created this? Or
who created? I mean, the basic fundamental question. I mean, who created this? For what purpose?
Why the
created what?
Living beings and
now this relationship between purusha and prakriti, you know, purusha being clouded by prakriti, and now we're in the middle of it.
Why? Jumping through the hoops and all that. I mean, why?
We can't help it.
Why?
So I think this is an observation of what's going on, and I think what your question is: why is it going on?
Why is it going on?
The question: why is it going on? Is avidya. That's the reason. According to Patanjali, The reason is avidya.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean.
That's why everything is going on. It's ignorance. If we knew that purusha is separate from prakriti, nothing would happen. You would not have all this rigmarole. You will not go through all this. Then you will be fat, dumb, and happy forever.
not, I guess, in a way, run the race or rat race.
Then you will not be in the rat race. The reason why all this is happening is because we don't know, we are not aware of the fact that Purusha is a separate entity from the ego, but we are associating the two together, and that's what making it all happen. And why is it all happening? Because of avidya, that pure ignorance.
But why are we put in these bodies to experience?
Why is that, Sridhar, again?
Why are we put in these bodies to experience life? If, you know.
Why are we doing this? How do you experience it otherwise? Well, you know, initially, whether you look at Vedanta or you look at yoga, everything was in a state of balance, right? There was no creation, no nothing, no life, no human being. Prakriti was separate. Mula Prakriti, very happy in its pure state. Purusha was separate, very happy. Nothing is happening, no life.
It sounds like that Adam and Eve story.
It's the Adam and Eve story, right? So somebody, you know, what, you know, Purusha said, I'm just guessing, you know, it's no fun, you know, let's have some fun. Hey, Prakriti, let's have some fun. The moment he did this, okay, the Rajas took over. Oh, I know how to make things happen. Rajas, I'm a Rajas. So he started all this entire creation. Okay, but the avidya comes with it. That's the point these people make, that this ignorance, avidya, has no beginning. There's no way to find out when it started, because it is anadi. It has no beginning, but it has an end. Avidya.
I read one of the translations that God wanted to see his reflections in a different forms. That's the reason he has created...
You know, the term in most our cultural texts, the term they use is Leela. Anybody heard the term Leela?
Yeah.
Leela is a play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's a what?
A play.
Play. Leela. They say this is God's Leela. Right? Why? Because if this Leela didn't happen, there'll be no fun. Then nothing is happening in life. But the moment this Leela happens, there is avidya. And because of avidya, there is this whole conflict of suffering and everything. And now, having gotten into this mess, we have to clear this mess. So we come to yoga class.
Can you explain how Maya relates to Leela and to Prakriti?
I prefer not to talk about Maya. The reason is that it's a Vedantic concept. Okay? And the moment you bring Vedanta into our discussion, it can cloud the mind in multiple ways because the concepts are slightly different.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay? At the very highest level, Maya is the same as Prakriti. Let me just keep it that way.
Okay.
I don't like to get into Vedanta discussion. That's it. If you want to talk about Vedanta, I will be happy to do that, but not within this framework of this class. Separate discussion. Okay. We have a discussion group, study group. You know, we've been meeting for the last 9 years, also 9 or 10 years now. There also, same principle we apply. No discussion of Vedanta, please. One topic is, you know, enough to keep us busy for a lifetime. It's been 10 years that we started our discussion study group, and we're only in chapter 4 right now, at the beginning of chapter 4, in 10 years. Okay? She's a part of that.
Yeah, I joined almost 3 years ago. We were in chapter 3, middle of chapter 3.
Middle of chapter 3.
Now we're in chapter 4.
So it's... Because it just takes that long to understand these things. And we still don't understand it.
So we're in deep sea, really.
It's a deep sea. The only question is, can we swim out of it? That's the whole problem, point.
Why swim out?
Hmm?
Why swim out? Just stay there.
Yeah.
That's the end game.
Enjoy. Enjoy the swim, right?
We're born again because we have to. We're still not liberated, and so we're born again. We're attached. What explains the world population explosion? How come there are more people?
You know, there's no easy explanation, but again they say that, you know, when you're reborn, you could be reborn as a human being or an insect or this or that, you know. And then when it's only through a human being, through a human birth, that you can eventually claim that you can get liberation, etc., etc. And then you don't accrue any karma when you are a different, you know, species. It's very hard. I don't know. Let me tell you the answer. I don't know.
The largest number of people are seeking liberation at this point, I guess.
I know, right?
Ever. Knowingly or unknowingly.
Okay. That's a question people have asked for millennia, and nobody has given an answer to that question, so.
We'll be in big trouble if all the insects evolve, right?
Right.
Sorry.
So, let's go to number 20. Anybody have any other thoughts?
No. I already read this, so I'm just thinking about that.
Okay. Okay, let's read that. Tadartha
eva
drishyasya
atma.
So, tadartha eva drishyasya atma. Okay. So, drishya, we saw that word already. Drishya means the seen or the prakriti. Okay, so the purpose of prakriti is tadartha. Tad means for its purpose, for the purpose of the purusha. So the sole reason, according to this, why prakriti exists is to eventually serve the purpose of purusha. That means attain liberation. It already mentioned that there are two things, bhoga and apavarga. Bhoga is experience, apavarga is liberation. But all this is, both of those are meant to help purusha. For the purusha is what, again, you know, commentator Vyasa says purusha is the swami. Oh no, actually there is a sutra here. Next one is. So it says that purusha is the swami or the owner, and prakriti is the swa or the owned or something, you know. Things like that. All right? So once you have that relationship, Swami and this and the one who is serving it, then the purpose is to serve the purpose of the Swami or the owner. All right. So the purpose of prakriti is to provide that liberation and bhoga. It's all to satisfy the needs of purusha. Purusha, the final need of purusha is to liberate itself, and prakriti is helping in that direction. Okay. 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 Let's read this first. And when I read this Sanskrit, if you notice, I break it into smaller chunks. When you break it, they sound different from what is written there, but that's how the nature of the Sanskrit language is. Okay. Kritartham. Prati. Nashtam. Api. Anashtam tadanya sadharanatvat. That's a long word. Sadharanatvat.
Isn't it ananya sadharan? Isn't it ananya sadharan?
No, not ananya. No. Tad.
Tad ananya sadharan.
No, not ananya. Tadanya. Ananya means different. Ananya means which has no parallel. Ananya. No, that's not the word here. Tadanya. Okay. Kritartham api. That means So Krita Artham means one whose job is done. Krita is done. Artham means its purpose. So when the purpose is fulfilled, Krita Artham means the purpose has been fulfilled. Okay? You're also learning a little bit of Sanskrit here when I do this. So bear with me if that's not what you're interested in. Is that okay to talk about, you know, the language itself? Yeah. Okay. All right. So now nashtam means something that has been destroyed. What are we talking about? What's destroyed?
Ego.
Prakriti or the ego, you're right. Destroyed in the sense that it's lost its significance. Not destroyed, not completely annihilated, but lost its significance, right? So when the purpose has been served, it's in a sense, it's now quiet. That means when the purpose has been served, when it has given that objective of liberation to the Purusha, now the ego has lost its ability to control everything. Okay, so in that sense, it is nashtam. In that sense, it's been finished, eliminated, destroyed, but not otherwise. It's still there.
Conquered.
The word he has used is nashtam for some reason. I also, you know, kind of questioned the word nashtam in the beginning. It's not really, you're not really finishing it, but it's the essence of the meaning is that the ego has been, ego's negative purpose has been destroyed in that sense. But it is anashtam for the purposes of others. Anya means others. In this case, anya means others. Okay?
Prakriti is there for the purposes of others.
Others. Now, this is where Anita's original question was, is it from a Big Bang kind of a thing? This is what it explains that. Yes, it is. Because Prakriti is common to everything. Okay, Purushas are independent. Purushas, these souls are independent. Prakriti is common to everything. It's one Prakriti. But you get a chunk of it. Right? So that's the answer to your question. See, that's why I don't want to bring Vedanta into it. That's what is confusing. Okay?
I also heard the same concept, basically.
That's the main reason why I don't want Vedanta in this discussion. Because we'll get confused. It's just the opposite in Vedanta. Just purely the opposite. Let's not discuss that.
Just knowing that it is opposite is good to know.
So, in Vedanta, there's only one Purusha. There's only one Atma. In yoga, every individual is one Atma, independent Atma, independent Purusha. In Vedanta, it's all one.
Instance of class.
Yeah, actually.
But aren't we finally trying to say that the whole world, we're all part of one being? We're all different?
Patanjali doesn't talk about the whole world. Patanjali only talks about the individual. His focus is this mind, individual mind, that's it. Once you understand the individual mind, you can take it to wherever you want. You can merge it with the whole world, you can merge it with Vedanta or some other philosophy, it doesn't matter. But his goal was to make you understand what this mind does and how it functions and how can you purify it. That's it.
But the way I understood was like, once your ego is gone, there is no drishyam. For others, it's still there because they are clouded by maya or ego.
Right.
So that is the essence of this sutra, or is it different?
No. When you say there is no ego, first of all, it's never going to be a situation when there is no ego. Ego is always there. Remember, there are four functions of the mind. Manas, buddhi, ahankar, chitta, four functions. They are very commonly mentioned in every text. Manas, buddhi, ahankar, chitta, four functions, right? Mind, intellect, ego, and the memory. four functions. They're always there. They're always going to be there. The only thing we are trying to attain is the fact that we don't want the dominance of the ego over the intellect. And we want to purify the mind so that all these samskaras are completely cleaned out. That's our objective.
Samskara are the memories.
Some past impressions, memories, habits, whatever you want to call them. The whole objective of all this is to cleanse out the mind so that the ego doesn't have anything to worry. Basically, we are robbing the ego of its playground. That's what it is.
So in meditation, I remember you talked about that burning the seeds.
Right.
Same concept.
So same concept. You know, Vyasa, you know, the main commentator, he calls them Dagdha Bija.
Dagdha Bija.
That's the term he uses, Vyasa. Okay. What he's saying is that there's no way you can destroy all the memories. Memories are going to be there, but they become ineffective because they act like Dagdha Bija. Okay? Because you have planted the seed of that Nirodha. We talked about that in one of the previous lectures, that we plant the seed of Nirodha. Nirodha is the total cessation of all thought. When that seed is planted, it obliterates all the other seeds. Okay, that's how it is explained. And that Nirodha is what we get through meditation,
right,
eventually.
So, but this still, although destroyed for him who has attained liberation, so that part is okay, but it still exists for the others. What does that mean?
That means that those only, so what he's saying is that for one particular, let's say one person, I'm talking of an individual, for example, he has gone through his entire part, you know, meditation, eight limbs of yoga, and finally he has attained liberation. That means his purusha is now feels very separate. And now he's not going to go through that life and death cycle again. Liberated. That means he's not going to be reborn. But that prakriti, even though it is ineffective now for him, because it's not going to be carried to his next life. But there are other beings whose purusha is still entangled, still bonded to that prakriti. So it still exists for them.
I see. So that's why the notion of prakriti is common to all.
Yes.
And purusha is individual.
Individual, yes.
You solve your own problems and...
That's right.
So
yes.
What happens to the purusha once it's disentangled from
prakriti? Disentangled, then it's not going to be reborn. That's basically it. Then because of it's been untied now from there. It's only because of the ties that there is a karmashaya. Now there is no more karmashaya, so there's no rebirth.
So
happy.
Okay.
For a yogi who is pursuing this and trying to liberate his purusha, ultimately to achieve moksha. Once he reaches that stage where he feels the separation between purusha, prakriti, and is completely rid of all the attachments and everything, why would he want to live?
That's again the concept here. That's a great question. You know, why would he want to live? He would want to live for two reasons. You know, we talked about the concept of karma. Right? There are three types of karmas. Does anybody remember the three types of karmas we talked about?
Prarabdha
karma,
Sanchita,
Agami karma. Okay? Three types of karmas. Sanchita is the total bank balance, the entire bank balance, out of which a subset is given to us for this life. When we are born, at that time, out of that total complete bank balance called Sanchita, was a big bag, okay, we are only given a small subset of that.
Current liabilities. Only.
Okay. Now, that is called Prarabdha. But then during our lifetime, through our willpower and through our, you know, actions, we create more karma. And that's called Agami karma. Now, let's say at certain point in our life, while we are still alive, we attain liberation. Okay? Now, our mind is purified. We are completely aware that I am nothing but pure Purusha, and all this body is purely for my experience. I've attained that realization. My prarabdha karma is still there. That is not going away anywhere. Now that prarabdha karma says that, I'm just picking something randomly, that at age 65 I'm going to get cancer. You will get cancer. But you have to live through that. But you will live through that with that pure, clean, Purusha being. That means there will be no suffering at that point. Even you, if you have cancer, no suffering. Okay? Even if people die in your family, there will be no suffering. You live like a pure being. The second purpose is, having had that liberation, now you may be able to transmit that knowledge to other beings to help them out.
But that's a choice.
That's a choice.
That's a choice, right?
Right.
So, but does it mean that, let's say, if I know I'm liberated, but just because of prarabdha karma, says, taking your example, that till the age of 65 I'm going to get cancer. He wouldn't know that.
No.
But by ending his life after getting liberation, that prarabdha karma is not over yet. So is he liberated or not? Is he going to come back to complete that prarabdha karma?
No, he is liberated. That's it.
So then, what's the point?
He can do samadhi.
Yeah.
No. The point is, his physical body is still there. Liberation doesn't mean the physical body is gone. Physical body is still there. I still have my mind. I may still have my job, my wife, my family. Everything is still there.
Agree.
It just stops affecting you negatively.
That's fine. But okay. If I have reached that stage,
right,
I wouldn't want the physical body to be there. Let's say I decide to end my life.
And why would you want to do to end your life?
Because the purpose is over.
So you will commit suicide? Is that what you see?
Samadhi.
No. Samadhi can come. Are you inflicting injury to yourself to let that happen? Or how is it happening?
I don't know. That's what...
No, but that's what I'm saying. There's no reason to commit suicide at that point. You live there. You will actually be helping others. You'll be doing a lot of service to the society, because you have attained liberation, and your mind is pure, and you can help others to attain that kind of freedom also.
Well, that's a choice.
Vivekananda
and Shankaracharya, they were liberated at the age of like 30s, 31, 32.
But all these people, they are examples of the same thing. Swami Paramahansa, these people like Ramakrishna and Vivekananda and Ramana Maharishi, they gave all these examples, right? Now, these people were liberated. Okay? Ramakrishna, for example, cancer comes from his example, right? He had cancer. But did he suffer? No. Zero suffering.
You're saying you don't feel physical pain anymore?
No. Physical pain is there. Suffering is not there. There's a distinction between physical pain and suffering. Suffering is mental. Physical pain is there, but there will be no suffering.
In order to stay and do service to the community and help liberate others, wouldn't that require some sort of knowledge or realization that everyone's Purusha is made of the same stuff, or like that we're all connected in some way? Or why else would you want to, like, why else would you be motivated to stay and help, all these other Purushas that are independent of you?
No, Purushas are independent, but there are people, we are a part of society, right? We're still going to be a part of society. If I have a job, I might still be continuing with my job, right? Now, through this, this whole life, we are going to interact with others. And through our interactions, we know that people are suffering. I have come to the point where I don't suffer anymore, but the others who might be suffering. And if I know something that I can help others, why not?
It's from compassion.
Hmm? Yeah.
From compassion.
Compassion.
But doesn't the root of compassion have to be some knowledge that we are the same, or that we are connected in some way?
You feel for the suffering of others. and you want to help them end it.
Our connection through with others is through this understanding that everyone has the same structure. It's Purusha and Prakriti.
Right.
Everyone has the same structure. And that's the connection in a sense. Right? Having understood my own separation, you know, I know that this person has the same bondage. Let's see if I can help. My interaction will be better.
They say that liberated people have a knowledge of past and future, so they know they're going to have cancer.
Not necessarily. Yeah. They can have that knowledge, but not everyone. You know, these Siddhis, Patanjali says they may come. Okay, then it's not necessary that you will have a Siddhi just because you are a yogi. No. Okay, so the Siddhis are not a given. And it's only some people who get the Siddhi. I mean, there are examples given in that Yogananda book, for example. These people knew the past and future and all that, some of them. Autobiography of a yogi, if you read that, he has given examples. All right.
So, in one of our earlier classes, we mentioned that once you self-realize, these karmas are not going to affect you. So that includes prarabdha karma also?
No. What we said was that once a person attains realization, then there will be nothing deposited in the karma bag as agami karma.
Stop collecting garbage.
Stop collecting karma. New karmas. But the prarabdha karma is there. It's going to carry you through the life. But you will not be collecting new karma. And as soon as the physical body disappears, your sanchit karma goes with it. No more sanchit karma. All right. This is the very crux of the Sankhya philosophy. Okay. I'm getting a very dry throat now, so I'm going to stop here, but any questions, any thoughts, finally?
I have one question.
Yes.
If someone wanted to really try to become liberated, how long would it take?
How long would it take? 21 days, 7 minutes, 5 seconds.
I mean, would it take an entire lifetime? Because, you know,
it takes, Patanjali says multiple lifetimes.
Oh, okay. So can I collect some now, this life?
Yes. You don't start with a clean slate. That's what Patanjali says.
Okay.
And that's not uncommon in all other scriptures also. They say the same thing roughly. And Patanjali is just repeating the basic Hindu concept that when we are born with our karma bag. And that karma bag will carry with it whatever status we have attained in this life. That's why the karma bag says that you will not start with a clean slate. Karmashaya, that's the concept of karmashaya. Ashaya is this whole collection of karmas, but that carries with you. So if you've attained a certain level of, you know, consciousness, which is somewhat purified, somewhat less of an ego, you will start with that. And then, you know, when you're born again, where you are born, you might be born, if it's purified consciousness, you might be born in the household of a yogi or something, you know, so that you will continue in that path. That's what it says. Exactly. That's a very strong possibility. Yes. Right.
General question: does Vairagya include like relationships with people?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
So, like, in order to get fully liberated, do you have to become a sadhu type thing?
mentally, sadhu in your thoughts. You don't have to give up anything. You have to give up attachment. So you still be married, you might you have family, kids, wife, everything, but no attachment. What does that mean? That means, let me take a silly example, right? You have a, let's say, a teenage daughter or something, right? You have a teenage daughter. And dinner is ready, your daughter is still not home. Okay, and you're waiting now. Your thought is, oh my God, she might have met with an accident, she might have lost her way, or she might be in some bad company, might be drinking in some party or something like that, right? That's attachment. That's the part that we are saying that you should get rid of. Okay? Now, when you have that attachment, it causes suffering of all kinds. That's the attachment which causes all kinds of suffering. If you and it causes suffering not only for you, but for everyone else who's involved. It causes suffering to, let's say, take the example of a daughter, it'll cause suffering to the daughter as well as you. Now, if you don't have that, say that again.
I was going to say, but you can still have compassion and care.
Absolutely. But the point is, if you have a mind which is, if you have a mind which is free of the egoistic tendencies, and you are able to think clearly through your pure intellect, which is purified, then you are more compassionate, you're more understanding, and you'll do the right thing, which will help you as well as your person that you're involved with. That's non-attachment. So non-attachment helps everybody. Vairagya helps everybody. Okay, it helps you and it helps everybody that's associated with you.
Well, I guess the point of becoming a sadhu, not mentally, physically also, giving up everything and go away, is because it may not be practical to live in this world with so many things going on around you and still be aloof from it. Like the example you gave, daughter is not home, there could be a number of possibilities. So it could be termed as being irresponsible, not thinking of all these possibilities and taking action about those things. So calling her up, calling her friends and find out where she is. So by not being attached to her, you wouldn't do any of this.
Sure, why not? Your mind will, your pure intellect will tell you that, look, there are possibilities that can happen. Let me find out. It's not because of the ego. It's not because you're thinking negatively. Because you want to do the right thing. You might even call your friends that, look, my daughter is not home at 8 o'clock. She was supposed to be home. Do you know anything about her? That's perfectly okay. That's exactly the point. That's doing things through proper understanding, through the intellect, not the ego. Ego is going to tell you to worry. Ego is going to tell you, oh my God, she met with an accident, she ran away with somebody and she's drinking in a party and all. That's ego. Pure intellect, it's 8 o'clock, she was supposed to be home, she's not there, let me call her friend. That's who she went with.
So implicitly, does that mean lesser emotions?
Yeah, emotion, let's not, negative emotions. Let's not misunderstand the terms. I like to use the term ego. Ego is usually associated with the negative emotions. So keep it at the term ego. Okay, because then we otherwise we start adding things which everyone has a different understanding about those things. Yes, emotions are a part of the ego. Okay, so try to incorporate the actions based on the pure intellect, not the ego. And that will guide us to the right action at the right time. Okay, not out of attachment, not out of raga and dvesha, but out of pure wisdom. The Patanjali uses the term prajna. Prajna is the term he uses for pure wisdom. Prajna. Anybody heard that term?
But that is the name of a
wisdom.
Yeah. Prajna means pure intuitive wisdom, which is not associated with the ego.
Prajna.
In Marathi, they'll call it prajna. Okay, in Sanskrit it is prajna. minor differences. In every regional language, it's pronounced differently.
My cousin's name is Pradnya.
Hmm?
My cousin's name is Pradnya.
That's, yeah.
But my concern is if I don't show emotion to any of the situations, I might, as you mentioned, I might look aloof and like I don't care.
But
to whom?
That's your ego concerned about looking bad.
Uh-huh.
To whom?
To the daughter.
To the people around me.
Yeah. So why are you concerned about that? Is that your ego coming into play?
Well, if you don't want to hurt them, and maybe they, their feelings would get hurt if you're not, you know, being, you know, happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
This,
you have to carry your responsibilities according to your role without any attachments or emotions.
It's hard because with teenagers, if you don't rise to their level of emotion, then they don't think you care and you can't solve it.
I guess that's why it was the choice of people to leave everything and go away.
Yeah.
That's
much easier.
That's running from the responsibility.
No. Rather than, you know, going to a sweet shop and not eating sweets, you know, just stay away from the sweet shop.
Stay away from the teenagers.
If you leave the responsibilities and run away, like you'll be born as some insect and next.
At least while we're in the samsara sagar, I guess we are forced to do everything that's expected of us.
Right, that's what we think.
I think that's what Gita tells us.
Right.
Karma nevadikara.
Nothing is defined or undefined.
Exactly.
Doing your karma.
Okay, 5 minutes of quiet time. We always do that toward the end. Just sit quietly.